Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to the Guys in Tights podcast. This is Dustin. I'm here with Rob. I got Rob on the phone, and it's been too long, probably. This is probably my fault. But, Rob, how are you doing? What's been up in your life? How's your ankle? People are dying to know.
Very good, man. Yeah, you know, it's been... well, a little over a month. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, dude, just enjoying the summer. Ankle is coming along slowly but surely. So not 100%. I was telling you, dude, I'm all in for week one. It's like it's got a little RG3 vibe.
Yeah.
It, dude, you know, like as long as I can make it to the stadium week one, that's the goal we're working towards.
Perfect. Perfect. That's all we can ask for. Well, good. So and I've been kind of everywhere. I was in Omaha for a little bit, which we'll talk about later. And then I took some vacation time because it's summer break for me. And, you know, as a teacher, I'm not working right now. But also, my fiance CJ has had some time, like one week off this whole summer in med school. So we took some vacation. But we are back. I just actually had my wedding tasting, which I was telling Rob about. So I'm actually in Charlottesville right now, which is fun. And we are, but you know, I was telling you before this, but there's been like, it feels like there's a lot that we could talk about, but also there's not a ton of like UVA specific stuff. So I think we're going to do kind of a mixed bag today to kind of catch up from the month that we took off. So let's jump right into it. You want to start talking about the Omahoos and the College World Series?
Yeah, let's definitely do that, man. And you know, you're the resident expert here, since like you said, you actually were in Omaha, which
yeah.
I'm super jealous of.
It was really fun, and I want to talk about my experience there. But before we do that, I do want to talk about our sponsor from Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is live audio only sports talk platform. It is free to download and free to use. You can talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. You can also start ongoing conversations, join ongoing conversations with other fans, with athletes, and react to the biggest news and rumors. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app for free in the iOS or Android app store. All you need to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever group you want. All right. Make sure to follow and download Spotify Green Room for all your sports talk needs.
UVA football is the softest bunch of cream puffs, bow tie wearing, brie cheese eating, NASCAR wearing wussies I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to punch people from UVA right in the neck. They wear suits to games. That's absurd.
Yeah, I was in Omaha, and I was there, so I was only there for the first two games, and that wasn't because we lost the second game, it was because I actually planned that ahead of time. I could only stay for the first two games because I actually was going on another vacation, but then UVA made the College World Series, and I was like, well, I'd like to go for just a little bit anyway. So it was really an interesting time, because in Omaha, there's not a lot else to do, if you can imagine that. There is stakes, and then there is baseball. And actually, the other fun thing was that the swimming trials were happening right across the street from the baseball field. So it was like there was a lot of swimming people there, and then there was like a lot of baseball people there. And so it was a really interesting mix of like sports fans and athletes and a lot of people. It was kind of like, you know, if you remember the feeling from Minneapolis, like for the Final Four, it was kind of like that, but like on a smaller scale maybe, because there wasn't as many, like, you know, probably personalities or celebrities just kind of walking around.
Yeah, dude, I mean, that was my first question to you was, you know, what's it like? How's it compared to Minneapolis? You know, obviously Minneapolis, like, you know, college basketball is kind of a bigger stage than baseball, but, dude, I can imagine, and I'm sure it's awesome. And like you said, like, that's part of the reason I love Minneapolis as the site for it, is because, like, you know, you weren't in New York with, like, you know, everything in the world going on around you. Like, everything in Minneapolis was Final Four that weekend.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, and, you know, Omaha's got the same vibe during the College World Series, because, like, all eight teams there and all their fans were there, and, you know, we're just intermingling with everyone. Everyone's really happy to be there. It's not like, you know, a lot of times, like, if you go to an away sports game, there's kind of this tension between you and other fans, especially if you're wearing, like, you know, other gear or, like, UVA stuff. Or, you know, it's even worse in for a professional sport. Like, I know if you wear Washington football team stuff somewhere else, like, you're going to get talked to in a not nice way, probably. But that's, like, not the case at all. And it's similar to the Final Four, you know, everyone that was in Omaha for the College World Series was just super, like, nice and happy and excited to be there. And, you know, it was a good time. It was really chill. And, you know, baseball games are just long and fun. And I had a really good time. So I'd love to go back eventually and, you know, stay longer next time. But yeah, so UVA, of course, wins game one against Tennessee, loses second game against Mississippi State, and then we go on to lose in the loser's bracket as well. Rob, how much of the games did you watch?
You know, I actually watched a good deal of it because, well, I mean, obviously because I like UVA. But, you know, this is coming from a guy who normally doesn't watch much baseball. You know, I remember the 2015 run when we won the championship. I actually didn't get to see hardly any of that run because I was studying abroad at the time. So I was in Spain, and, you know, most of the games on Spanish time were starting so late, like, I just wasn't able to watch it.
Yeah.
So this was actually a lot of fun for me to, like, watch this run, you know, especially working from home, too. You know, like, you have games going on at, like, 1 o'clock on a Tuesday, and then obviously it gets a bit more prime time once you get to the College World Series, but it was a fun run to watch, dude. And, you know, having Stephen Schock was awesome. Like, definitely gravitated towards him really quickly. So yeah, dude, it was a fun thing to watch. I mean, I know you watched a lot of it too. And then obviously going to the World Series was, I'm sure, amazing.
I think like one thing that was really fun was how the team played super well when they hadn't for most of the season. You know, NC State and UVA both coming out of the ACC, and really neither of us played well to start the year. UVA wins, I think, five of their last six ACC, not matches, but the
series.
Series, yeah, that's right, series. And so that I mean, it's so fun to watch. And then, of course, once they get to the tournament, they lose the first game of the regional and they lose the first game of the super regional. So they're in the loser bracket for both of those games and need to fight their way out. So they win, I think, five or six elimination games in a row, which is pretty amazing, because any one of those games, if they lose, they, you know, they don't make it. Our hitter stepped up, our pitching stepped up in a big way, and of course the regional and super regional, and then of course against Tennessee in that first game was just incredible, the way that we pitched and the way that we hit. And of course for the first eight innings of the Mississippi State game, those two were, you know, really great, great performances all around. So it was a really fun experience. I'm glad that the athletes got a chance to, you know, do one last run. And you mentioned Stephen Schock earlier, and even though he didn't play well in his last outing against Mississippi State, he did have kind of that rise to fame during the regionals with the whole, you know, Dippin' Dots thing, and, you know, I'm afraid, what are you afraid of, caves, you know, whole scenario. he's just a lightning rod. But I think it's ironic that the NIL bill comes out, you know, kind of a month after he becomes famous for that. Because imagine if that was there, if the NIL bill was around and Steven Schock is able to sign a deal with Dippin' Dots for, you know, $20,000, you know, and, you know, promote them. I just think it's too bad that they missed out on just a little bit.
I totally feel that. And, you know, to fairness where fairness is due, I'm pretty sure he was playing with a injured UCL in the game against Mississippi State. So he comes in and, you know, it was just kind of like a collapse. It was the eighth inning, I think. Which was a shame. It's a shame to kind of see the run end, you know, lose to Texas 2 days later, but it was a shame to kind of see that as kind of the tipping point. But, dude, I mean, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I don't know if he's cashing in on any of it now. I know he's very active on Twitter. I don't know if he's always been active on Twitter. I'm just paying attention now. But yeah, dude, I mean, definitely. And I mean, that post-game interview was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like, for anyone who doesn't really follow baseball that closely, you know, I'll throw myself in that bucket. Dude, I mean, that interview got me on board. That interview got me like, all right, well, I got to watch this game.
Got
like,
you watching,
this is the team.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, so, I mean, he did a great job of reeling people in and getting people interested in his story. And so, but, you know, I do want to talk about the NIL bill for a little bit. Now we've already kind of started down that path. For those who don't know, the NIL bill is for student athletes who are now able to make money off of their name, image, and likeness. That's what the NIL stands for. And so student athletes all over the country have begun to sign deals with major brands. They have begun to hire agents. They are they're doing ads. Like, a lot of the basketball team is sponsored by Phony Bennett now. Like, I guess Phony Bennett just pays them money, and, you know, they have it in their Twitter bio. I'm trying to think of some other UVA athletes that have, you know, cashed in already. But I think, Rob, what are your initial thoughts to the NIL bill and what student athletes have been able to do so far?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, I think it's been a long time coming. I mean, I think this is the idea of empowering athletes through name, image, and likeness. I mean, to me, is a no-brainer. And I mean, even, you know, I rose all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court was like, yeah, of course they should be able to do this.
Yeah.
Like, why are we even here in this case? So, you know, I think it was a long time coming, and I think it's great for the athletes. You know, as far as the deals go, I think there's going to be an evolution of this. You know, and it's really unique, too, because, you know, in college, this is so new, and, you know, so many of these opportunities that people have in, you know, professional sports, obviously there's individual endorsement deals, but there's also, you know, broader collective bargaining agreements to help represent the players as well in certain things. You know, for example, like, to me, the first thing that comes to mind is the NCAA football game. You know, on the surface, they have to negotiate with every player to get each player in the game individually. While if you go to like Madden or 2K or anything like that, that's all done through a collective bargaining agreement with the player. So anyway, not to get too far into the details, but, you know, this is something that's going to evolve. And I think the star of the show was really Derek King. You know, Derek King had a lot of things lined up, you know, came up with 10 deals. You know, like as soon as the clock struck midnight when it went into effect, you know, the basketball players, as you alluded to, have some deals going. Not sure how big those are, but, you know, I think this is something that's going to evolve, and we're going to see kind of how this plays out, how athletes react to it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's a very good thing for these athletes because, you know, there's no reason a normal college student couldn't do this anyway, but only athletes were precluded, and now the athletes get the same rights as they should.
Exactly. And, you know, so I think there's just a lot of, like, good that can come from it. There's a lot of benefits to these athletes who, you know, at a time where they don't make money. I mean, they're compensated technically. Like, you know, if you want to make the argument, they get paid, or they used to get paid through education, through, you know, gear, through perks at the school, but now they can actually make money off of their likeness and image. And this goes back years and years of student athletes who have, you know, done things on the side. Like they've run businesses that have been shut down by the NCAA. They've run YouTube channels by athletes who used to be shut down by the NCAA if it was run by a student athlete, which is really too bad, because in all honesty, there's no reason why a student athlete shouldn't be able to do things in their own time and be able to make money from it. And I think that this has been, as you said, a long time coming. And I think that, you know, Rob, are there any downsides that you see to the NIL bill or players using name, image, and likeness?
You know, first off, my answer is no. I don't think there's any downside. Okay. I will say the downsides that people talk about or think about is how does it affect level of competition, and mm-hmm. how does it, you know, affect players on the recruiting trail? You know, technically as part of the NIL, there is not supposed to be any pay for play,
yeah.
which that means, you know, I'm going to pay you $100 for every touchdown you catch, you know, yeah. like there's technically not supposed to be anything like that. But we probably both know that'll come out and that'll probably happen. And, you know, honestly, it already happens. There's a mm-hmm. lot of, you know, under the table stuff that happens in big time college athletics. And I think that's really the main point here is, you know, yeah, like some schools are going to be better positioned to get endorsement deals for their players.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of it already. But, you know, talking about competitive imbalance, I mean, I think you already see that in the sport. I mean, you know, looking at basketball, you know, it's, you know, the blue bloods, and then you might get a team that rises up here and there, but it's pretty consistent mix of who the top teams are year after year. You know, mm-hmm. you want to talk football, you know, it's Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama, and every few years, maybe an Oklahoma will pop their heads in, or an yeah. LSU will pop their heads in, but the imbalance is already there.
Yeah.
So all of this exists through, you know, superior facilities, superior strength coaches, athlete experience, you know, however you want to say it. So, I think that's what a lot of people are scared of is, you know, is this going to create an atmosphere that's going to tilt the scales too far in favor of one of these like powerhouse schools? And I think the simple answer is that scale is already tilted, and this, yeah. you know, is basically just empowering the players. I don't think it's changing any competitive balance issues.
I mean, you can look
do you see any downsides?
Oh, exactly what you said. I think that there's this fear that this could happen, and that was the main argument for people who didn't want this to happen, you know, big higher-ups in the NCAA who didn't want to lose power over these student-athletes. But, you know, if you look at it, like, take, for example, after the NCAA tournament when, like, you know, what was it, 1,200 players transferred in men's basketball or something like that. You know, they got that one-time free transfer rule, which I think is staying, actually. You know, if you without penalty, players can transfer once and they don't have to sit out. So, but it was a lot of players going from small schools to big schools. And, you know, sometimes the rich got richer. You know, Kansas, Kentucky, both got some great transfers from smaller schools. We've gotten transfers from smaller schools as well. This helps our program too. So I don't think anything changes with this new bill. What I do think changes is that actually a huge benefit could be that people stay longer, or that players who might leave to go pro earlier might stay. So we might see players, you know, Trey Murphy, recently has declared that he is going to stay in the NBA draft. He's not coming back to UVA for his final season or final two seasons, it could have been. But if the NIL bill was around, you know, maybe that's a different story. And of course, that it all depends on his draft stock, and his stock is really high. He might jump into the lottery at some point. But, you know, for players who are thinking about staying or going pro, we might see a lot more players who are borderline stay, make some money, which is really what it's about. You know, supporting their family is being able to do what they want and still play college basketball or, you know, football or whatever their sport is, and get a good deal out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to kind of kind of continue that conversation, another variable that comes into that is, you know, how much money is available? You know, how much money are these guys really making? You know, is because De'Aaron King, as we alluded to, the Miami quarterback, you know, he was really the star of, you know, the show. Like he was the one that cashed in on lots of deals, you know, when the clock struck midnight. And, you know, I think it was $20,000-$30,000. I'm not sure if he's made more than that since then, but that was about where it played out. And, you know, not to downplay that amount of money, because, you know, that's a significant amount of money to anybody. But, you know, I think that was part of the fear is, you know, these guys are, you know, just going to be making millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, it's really not going to be the case. You know, I think we're going to have to see how the market plays it out, because ultimately it is going to be a market-based thing. And, you know, you have to consider who's, you know, putting in the money, who's allowing these players to profit, you know, off these name, image, and likeness deals. You know, is this going to be a $500 come in my car dealership ad, or is this going to be, you know, a De'Aaron King somewhere in the middle? Of course, there's the potential for huge spikes for a player like Zion Williamson. Maybe Nike hops in early with him and he's making millions of dollars while in school. There's, of course, those exceptions. But, you know, we also have to kind of take into consideration that, you know, the market really hasn't spoken fully yet about what these deals are going to look like. And I think that's going to be one of the big things we find out is, you know, where's the money coming from? Is it coming from, you know, local businesses? Is it coming from, you know, larger brands like Nike, Gatorade for the really, really top athletes? You know, we just don't know yet. So that'll certainly be a variable that plays in there. But I think one of the big things that we haven't said yet is I think this really benefits the non-revenue athletes, and in particular, a lot of the women's athletes as well, just because they don't get necessarily the TV coverage. And, you know, they could be amazing at their sports. You know, Virginia has had so many swimmers and tennis players and, you know, golf players and what have you that have been amazing, you know, top of college athletics, but, you know, they're never on TV, and people might know who they are within their specific circles, but, you know, really don't get broad recognition. So this gives extremely talented athletes that, you know, are kind of in that bucket a chance to, you know, really profit off of their work.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and especially what you said about women's athletes. I read somewhere, this was a long time ago, but that women's athletes, women's college athletes are actually way more marketable than men's athletes, especially if you look at, like, let's just, one example is Instagram. You know, Instagram is a huge place for influencers, people who are marketing products. College athletes are able to have a huge following on Instagram. So, you know, you can get paid for a post based on how many followers you have. And if you are, you know, if you're playing women's soccer, for example, you can get paid just for having a lot of influence on Instagram, which I think is huge. And it's great for, you know, players on non-revenue sports teams that are now able to make some money in a sport, doing a sport that they love. You know, a lot of the players from those non-revenue sports don't go on to play professionally. And even if they do play professionally, it's not like, you know, football or NBA or even WNBA. Like, a lot of them, I'm sure the pay is not great. Right. So if you can make some money while you're in college and getting a degree, that's a huge. That's huge for, you know, for those people.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, and I think a big distinction here too, we also have to throw in is, you know, this is name, image, and likeness. These are players. This gives the players the ability to, you know, profit in the free market based off of their name, image, and likeness, like it says. This is not schools paying a salary to players.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big difference. And I think some people, I think a lot of people, at least that I've read on Twitter and message boards, kind of understand the nuance there. But, you know, I think there are still, that is still a difference that, you know, sometimes needs to be said is, you know, the schools are not paying these athletes. This is giving the athletes the ability to profit off of their name, image, and likeness, just like any other student gets to be able to. Before, it was only withheld from athletes.
Right.
So I think this makes all the sense in the world. And, you know, like we said, I think it's a long time coming.
I think so too. I agree. Rob, any last word on NIL or or what else do we talk about? College World Series, I guess, before we move on to football talk.
No, I mean, the one thing I would add with the NIL is I'm curious, you know, from a UVA perspective, I'm very curious how this plays out. You know, what if – I'm sure there will be some small businesses that, you know, get in with the athletes. You know, I don't know if UVA has any players on basketball or football right now that will generate, you know, a deal from kind of a big, you know, nationwide type company or international company. I don't know if we'll see that, but maybe someday we will. But I'm curious how this will play out. And, you know, UVA formally has not released any guidance, you know, as far as how they plan to help the athletes approach it. I'm sure that'll come, and some schools have released that already. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it'll be interesting to follow.
Yeah, and I am excited to follow it and see what's going to happen. You know, there's not a lot of people who know what, you know, is going to happen and how it's going to play out and, you know, everything like that. So I think I'm interested to see, you know, what goes on this year, especially across, like, all these different sports. I mean, you're looking at college football, king of sports. How are those players going to be affected? How are college basketball players going to be affected? How are, you know, even lacrosse play? Like, you know, we won the national title in lacrosse and, you know, women's swimming and diving. Would those players get a bump in their value? I think that's really interesting to look at. And what other rules come from either schools or the NCAA itself about name, image, and likeness and how that affects players and what they get paid and everything like that. So, I'm really excited for that. But before we get into football, I do want to talk about our sponsor from Spotify Green Room. So Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform. It is free to download and free to use. You can talk to players, athletes, me, Rob, other people who use the platform. You can join ongoing conversations, start your own conversation, watch games together, react to the biggest news, rumors, and games. It is easy to talk to other sports fans this way. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app, which is free in the iOS or Android app store. You create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever group you want. If there's a UVA group, or if there's a, you know, a player or someone else you want to follow, you follow them. Make sure to download the Spotify Green Room app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Rob, so it's time for football. Football is right around the corner, less than a month, I think, until NFL comes back. I'm excited for everything with that. I'm excited to see who's on Hard Knocks this year. But let's talk about college football. Let's talk about UVA football. We're going into year six of the Bronco Mendenhall era, and I think you wanted to just talk about our feelings with how it's going. So why don't you start off going into year six? How are you feeling about Bronco? What are your expectations? What is going on in your head?
Yeah, man, absolutely. And, you know, caveat all this with, you know, we will do more detailed previews of the football season.
Yeah.
We'll get there. But, you know, we're middle of July not right now. Training camp hasn't started. And, you know, it felt like a good time to just kind of kick back and, you know, really kind of do like a how we feeling, you know, not a formal state of the program necessarily, but, you know, where are emotions at? Are we happy with, you know, where things are, you know, all that jazz. So, yeah, I mean, year six, it is kind of hard to believe, isn't it? This would be the sixth year. Like, I remember when Bronco was hired, like it was yesterday. And yeah. We actually started covering, we started the podcast summer of 2018.
Yeah, so we actually
started covering their third season. So this would be the fourth.
This is season four. We're in the fourth season. Crazy.
I know. It is really is.
It was actually it was our Twitter birthday a couple weeks ago.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love
anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go on.
Oh, no worries. I hadn't said anything meaningful anyway. no, I mean, I think we're starting to settle in to what, you know, Virginia football is. Mm-hmm. And under Bronco Mendenhall, you know, he kind of said it the whole time. He said it from day one. You know, it's going to be will before skill. It's going to be, you know, physical. They're going to run a spread offense, and on defense, they're going to try to be really physical. And, you know, that's the name of the game. And, you know, as simple as it sounds, he wants to score a lot of points and score more points than the defense allows. Mm-hmm. You know, he really has his simple principles. And, you know, at this point of the Bronco Mendenhall era, you know, the book's a little dated now because it's about his time at BYU. But if anyone has not read his book, Running Into the Wind, or the book about him, I strongly encourage it because it really does give great insight into how he's ran BYU and how he's currently running Virginia. But yeah, you know, I feel like we kind of are where we are. You know, we're, I think, a team that can compete in the Coastal every couple of years. You know, we won the Coastal when we had really a transcendent talent in Bryce Perkins. I think we're a team that, you know, with a quarterback like Brennan Armstrong, who I think is solid and is going to surprise people this year by how much he improves. You know, I don't think he's Bryce Perkins, at least not this year. So, you know, I think even without that really, really kind of program transcending player, you know, this is a team that can win 7-8 games a year. And I think it really does take that transcendent type player to kind of, you know, get them over the hump to a little bit higher. But, you know, for a school without, you know, a huge football history, a school that, you know, admittedly is kind of struggling right now to raise money to revamp its athletic facilities. You know, I think he's doing a good job of getting the maximum amount out of what we have. You know, there's certainly times where I want it to be higher. And, you know, last season, you know, there were several games that I think Virginia should have won. Or maybe even just throw Virginia Tech in there, say, just please at least be competitive in that game, you know? But I think overall I'm happy with where we are. You know, certainly there's room to be better, and I'd love for us to be better, but, you know, I feel like we're kind of, you know, we're going into year six. I kind of feel like we're roughly where we're going to be, right? You know, kind of middle to top half every few years of the Coastal Division.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm curious what you think about that.
I mean, I feel really similarly. I feel like when you've got a coach like Bronco who is thoughtful, really well spoken, and seems like a generally nice guy, it makes it a lot easier to root for the team, right? Like when you've got, you know, if you've got a coach who you don't like, first of all, that's tough. And I think we're lucky, first of all, to have a coach like Bronco. Second of all, when I think that I'm happy to know kind of how the team is going to do every year. Like, I know that each year the team is going to be well coached. They're going to be hopefully really disciplined, and they're going to, you know, be physical and, you know, tried their best and get it done. You know, like a Mike London team, you know, was a roller coaster of emotions every year because we had really good players, but the coaching decisions were weird, and you know, the players weren't necessarily disciplined, and it was just tough to, it was tough on the mind and the soul those seasons. But I mean, under Bronco, it's like, well, you know, we might not win every game, however, we are going to be competitive, or at least try to be competitive, and hopefully not just lay down when there's a big challenge. And I know the last game of last season was tough on that, the Tech game, but you know, the rest of the games, I felt like, you know, even if there were mistakes, or, you know, we didn't play, and you know, there's injuries and COVID's a weird season anyway, so I'm not holding that against anyone really. But I think that it's nice to know that, you know, the team did pretty well considering we played three different quarterbacks in the first five games or something because of injuries. So I applaud the coaching staff for having them ready, as well as the players for, you know, being mentally prepared to go through that roller coaster of a season.
Yeah, I mean, like you said about last year too, you know, credit where credit is due. This team, you know, won the first game against Duke, lost the second game against Clemson, which went to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then that third game of the season, listen, they weren't going to beat NC State. Brennan Armstrong and the team didn't look good. But Brennan Armstrong goes out with an injury. And then the team, you know, falls to 1-2. The next week they lose 1-3. And Brennan Armstrong comes back against Miami. Looks okay, but they lose that game to a ranked Miami team, 1-4. So what happens? Virginia wins four of its next five. And really, if that Florida State game doesn't get canceled, I think Virginia wins that game too. And maybe we're talking about a five-game win streak going into the Virginia Tech game. So yeah, you know, like you said, you know, last year was a weird year. There's certainly things you can learn about it and things you can take away, but you know, it's probably not the definitive account that, you know, so many other full, you know, un-COVID impaired seasons really are. So, but you know, like you said, I mean, I've actually over the past couple weeks, I've been listening to a lot of the Locker Room Access podcasts they do with former players. And you know, some of them are just amazing. You know, they have guys like, you know, I listened to the Jackson Mateo one recently, I listened to the Kanan Severa one fairly recently. And, you know, just like the things that were going on in the London years, it's just crazy. Yeah. You know, like it wasn't well coached. The team wasn't, that is, you know, the program was not well managed. And I think, like you said, that's one of the strengths of Bronco. I mean, looking at this roster right now, you know, this is as deep of a roster as I can remember in recent memory. Now, there might not be kind of top star line, star talent at some positions, but, you know, from top to bottom, you feel pretty good about the two deep in basically every position.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing an identity that's built across the roster, you know, of physicality, of offense, you know, score a lot of points. I think the defense has taken a bit of a step back, although that may be changing, you know, with the scheme change we may be seeing this season. But yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's predictable. And there's what they're saying, less drama, more work. You know, like there's not much drama here. And it's honestly very relieving. You know, you don't just wake up one day and it's like, oh no, what just happened? Or, you know, I was showing one of my friends the Louisiana Tech game the other day from Mike London years. Khalid, get off the field. Like, we don't have that anymore. That at least in itself is relieving to look like a well-managed program.
Yeah, it's nice. And you know, I'll admit, I was, when talking about last season, I was trying to remember who we played in our bowl game, and I remembered we didn't have a bowl game. So I'm kind of already, you know, in the mindset that we'll make a bowl game every year. You know, it might not be the best one, we might be in the Military Bowl, but last year, you know, with COVID and players and you know, losing to, getting crushed to Tech and having a losing record at the end of the season was tough. But you know, I'm under the mindset that we can get to a bowl game every year, and I am okay with that, and I'm okay with, you know, whatever comes from it. And I think that this team will be successful in the best way that they can, and so that's really, as I said earlier, comforting and not as stressful as it used to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember under the London years, you know, looking at the schedule, and it's like, all right, well, like, we should beat William & Mary, right. You know, we should beat you know, whoever the cupcake is. I mean, I would say that about Louisiana Tech and Ball State. We've lost to both of those teams under Mike London. But you look at the schedule, and like beyond the FCS games, it was really, really hard to figure out what games this team was going to win.
Yeah.
And like you said, it wasn't for lack of talent. You know, the talent was there. And I think the difference is that really, you know, not to say Mike London and those, that coaching staff was like looking at recruiting rankings when they were doing their recruiting, but you know, you get the feeling they were kind of chasing stars that, hey, this guy's a big name player in the 757. So we got to sign him. It doesn't matter that he's a wide receiver and we already have 13 wide receivers on the roster, you know, and with Bronco, it's very deliberate. It's, we need to have at least this number of players at this many positions. You know, I don't really care where you're from, you know, what people say about you. Like, we're taking you because you're a good kid, you fit the school, and we think you're going to work really hard. You know, like, Bronco doesn't really care about what any of the outside noise is, which is refreshing. And, you know, it does away with a lot of the drama that I think we saw under the London years.
I also think one of the signs of a really healthy program is how good your offensive line is. And because that can really determine a lot about your team, is how good your O-line is. Under London, especially in the later years, you know, our O-line was trash. Like, we didn't have a good offensive line. And that carried into the Broncos' first couple of years, too. You know, just, you know, leftovers from the previous coaching staff. But, you know, you can see Bronco has improved the offensive line every year. And honestly, it's probably the strongest position, and we'll do positions later, but I think it's the strongest, if not one of the strongest position groups in this, on this roster for this upcoming season. I know it was last season, but like this season especially.
Yeah, you know what that is? It's roster management. You know, it's the idea of, it's just like we were saying earlier, it's the idea of, you know, Mike London loved flash. He loved, you know, getting the big name player. Well, you know, there's not many of those guys on offensive line, so. I think when Bronco came here, there weren't enough players in spring practice to fill out a two deep. You know, think about that. And now, like you said, that was a big impediment, you know, early in Bronco's tenure, you know, the Kurt Benkert years especially. And I mean, heck, even Bryce Perkins never really played behind a really, really good offensive line. And, you know, I think the line was solid last year. Hopefully it'll take another step forward this coming year. But it's all about recruiting players. You know, it sounds simple, but it's like, you have to have principles and how you want to build a program. And you have to say, you know, hey, there might be this really flashy wide receiver that maybe we can target, but hey, you know, we need two more scholarship offensive linemen in this class. You know, it's roster management. It's not complicated, but it's so important to do well. And it's something that is really a strength of Bronco. And, you know, I think what I've heard people say, and I agree with it, is, you know, if Bronco, let's say something happens and Bronco just steps away randomly, Bronco is going to leave the program in great shape. Not to say it's going to be the winningest program in the ACC, not to say, you know, it's going to be like this juggernaut, but whoever comes in and takes over the program is going to have a, you know, a great opportunity to succeed because the roster is well managed. The coaching staff is all balling in. You know, that's another thing with the London years is, you know, the coaching staff, you know, London wasn't really picking all of his assistant coaches. So, you know, you had coaches that didn't get along. You had different agendas. No one really knew who was in charge. You know, this coaching staff is so cohesive and, you know, they're friendly, but it's also very clear, you know, Bronco's in charge. He's the one calling the shots. And there's no debate about that. There's no hard feelings. There's no pent up anger that at least we're aware of. It's just an incredibly well managed program. And, you know, there's things that need to be done still. Like, you know, we alluded to the, football facility, I think is something that absolutely needs to get done. You know, kind of upgrading the to or from the BQ Center, whichever path they choose. So there's still things like that that need to get done. And, you know, that's part of running a program, just like any other business has things that, you know, need to get checked off the list. But, I think it's the program is in incredibly great shape, which is something we couldn't say a couple of years ago.
No, exactly. It's healthy. And I think that you know, you're talking about what if Bronco leaves, and you know, I think at this point, if they hired someone from inside the circle of Bronco's circle, like coaching staff, you know, whether it's one of his assistants or someone else, I think that, you know, the transition's honestly pretty seamless. And I don't think there'd be much change. I mean, Bronco's a great coach, but he's a businessman. Like, he's a businessman. So he runs the program. You've talked about this a lot. He's talked about this a lot. He runs the program like a business. So when you can just look at the numbers and say, well, we need, you know, two of this and three of that, and this is how we're going to run things, you know, he's a numbers guy at the end of the day. So it's interesting that he's turned this around so much that you might be able to pick and plug. You'd have a great choice of people to pick and plug from the coaching staff if he were to step away.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And, you know, I don't think Bronco's flat out said he's not going to coach until he can't coach anymore. Like, at some point he's going to step away because, you know, he's just not, I mean, he said it, he's not as passionate about college football as he once was, for a number of reasons. But yeah, I mean, he's a unique guy. And I mean, I think it's always interesting too, you know, sometimes he'll do interviews with, you know, broader national media, or, you know, at the very least, people who don't cover the UVA beat from day to day. And I always think it's interesting to listen to those media people. They're like, yeah, like, I've never heard a football coach talk like this.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard, you know, someone explain their philosophy in the way that he does, because it is incredibly, incredibly unique. And I mean, to many people, he's an acquired taste. You know, I can tell you, for one, I know several people who are like, what is this guy talking about? And then that first game of the season, his first game ever at UVA, they come out and get blown out by Richmond. They're like, what is this guy doing? Like, Mike London wasn't a saint by any means, but he wasn't losing to Richmond. But, you know, it was an acquired taste for a lot of fans, and it was acquired taste for many players. You know, there were a number of transfers in the first couple of years. There was, you know, his program kind of got stamped into the, you know, the culture, however you want to say it. You know, he's not for everyone, but I think he's a very strong fit for UVA. I know they're aligned so well, you know, with the broader university and how they want to, you know, represent the program. And, you know, part of it's really branding the school as well. So there's so much alignment there. You know, that isn't everything. Obviously, they still want to win football games too. And, you know, I think that's really going to be the differentiator, you know, over the next, you know, call it 4 or 5 years, assuming Bronco is still here. Is, you know, if Bronco can keep running the program like he's been doing, and they start winning 8, 9, 10 games a year, kind of reach the ceiling that Virginia Tech did in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it'd be difficult to do, but I think that type of thing is, you know, at least remotely within reach. I think that's really what's going to define, you know, was this a successful, you know, stint with Bronco as the head coach, or was this like a really, really successful stint?
Yeah.
And, you know, we can talk about all the, you know, non-football things all we want. At some point, football does matter.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, at least where Bronco has them right now, call it 7, 8 wins a year, I think is very good. I'm eager to see if they can take, you know, that next step. And again, I'm not being unrealistic saying Clemson level, but, you know, if they could get ranked in, you know, 15 to 25 range consistently, I mean, I think that'd be amazing. So anyway, that's kind of the next thing I really want to see in the evolution of the program.
I just want to be mentioned in the conversation for the 12-team playoff. That's all I want. If we can get there on a yearly basis, that's what I would like. Rob, here's a hypothetical for you. So we're talking about the football mattering, right? So if Bronco stays, you know, winning 6 or 7 games a year, making a bowl game, winning sometimes, is that enough, or are UVA fans going to get tired of that pretty quickly? I want to hear your opinion on that.
Honestly, I think it might be enough, you know, and I think part of that is just because the program has been starved for so long.
Yeah.
Welsh had, there were some really great teams under Welsh, but, you know, call it the later 90s, you know, the program kind of took a step back a little bit, you know, and then Al Groh comes in, and Al Groh, you know, has all these, you know, expectations. We're going to compete for championships, blah, blah, blah. And they recruited at that level for a few classes. And, you know, it really came down, I think it was 04 against Florida State. I mean, it was a top 10 matchup and we just got crushed. And, you know, ever since then, the program really hasn't recovered. I mean, we've never been near, I think we were ranked like 6th or 7th at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, the program's never come near that. So, you know, you're talking about a span of over 15 years where, you know, for a large portion of that span, we were barely making bowl games, or if, you know, we weren't always making bowl games. So I think if we get to that level, I think people are going to be pretty happy. And, you know, this, there's some really diehard fans in the UVA, you know, alumni base or, you know, fan circle, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And we're one of them, but there's also a lot of people that really just don't place a huge emphasis on, you know, how successful UVA is at football.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I know many of them, as you do as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if Virginia was to reach that level, it would probably be enough to the majority of the fan base. You know, if you get to that level and you keep winning, and then the question becomes, you know, what does it take to get over the top? You know, that's a different type of question. That's a question where, you know, do you have a legitimate chance at winning a national championship? That's the question, you know, Georgia faced a couple of years ago when they mm-hmm. let go of Mark Richt.
Yeah.
I think we'd be privileged to even have that type of discussion. Mm-hmm. So I think for now, you know, as long as there's at least a straight line trajectory, if not a slightly upward trajectory, I think people are going to be pretty happy with, you know, the way the program is right now. But yeah. What do you think?
No, I totally agree with you. I think that if Bronco can do 6 or 7 wins a year, get to those bowl games, I think it's going to keep the fan base really happy for a long time. I know that, you know, the king sport right now at UVA is basketball. And I think it's going to be like that for the foreseeable future. You know, even when Tony came in for Leto, you know, was it 12 years ago at this point? You know, that seems so long ago based on how much the basketball team and culture has changed around the basketball team. You can think back to right when Tony started and, you know, he makes it to the tournament in, I think, his 3rd year as coach. And that was, you know, huge, right? That was massive, making it to the NCAA tournament. And then next year he doesn't make it. And, of course, the year after that, we win the ACC championship. And I think the rest is history from there. So the rise to the top for basketball was so fast. And so, like, at this point, we're talking about, you know, every year before the season, we're talking about, oh, can we win a national championship this year? How good's the team going to be? And for football, it's more like, oh, you know, we look at each game. I know the schedules are different. You know, there's so many more games in basketball, and it's just, it's hard to, you know, judge like making the tournament or making a bowl game. But I think that fans would be happy with, you know, a 7-win team every year. I think I would be happy for a long time.
Yeah, I mean that's literally what happened 2018. You know, the team goes 7-5. They lose the last 2 games to Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech, which mm-hmm. is disappointing. But then they go to the bowl game and they get that 8th win. And people were thrilled. You know, we hadn't had an 8-win season since Mike London's 2nd year. Mm-hmm. And there were so many bad years in between that. I mean, yeah. Really, really bad years. So I get that feeling. You know, the hope is that, you know, that becomes the floor of the program.
Yeah.
You know, the hope is that, you know, a good season might be 9 or 10 wins in the floor. A bad season might be 6 or 7. And, you know, I keep bringing up Virginia Tech, and, you know, not to rub salt in the wound, but that's really what Virginia Tech was, you know, call it 02, 03 up until really call it 2010 or so.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to get that level. And, you know, Virginia probably have to recruit a little bit better than they are doing right now to reach that level. I think the recruiting right now is good enough to kind of be in the range that we're talking about, but if mm-hmm. they really wanted to kind of, you know, be on the cusp of that double digit win range, you might have to recruit a little better. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a realistic ceiling, and I think that's what they should strive for. I think 7 wins a year is great. You know, I think it's realistic. It, you know, a lot has to go right, but I think it's realistic to say Virginia can get higher.
Yeah.
But you know, like we just said, you know, it's a pretty privileged conversation to be in that territory and then say, oh, well, now what? And basketball, right. I mean, basketball is a fundamentally different sport, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot, you know, not to downplay what Tony Bennett has done because it's incredible, but less things have to go right to turn around a basketball program the way he has done.
Oh, for sure.
Than have to go right to turn around a football program. It's just a fundamentally different sport. More players, less competitive balance, you know, is fundamentally different. So I think what they've done to date, Bronco and his staff, has been very good. I think there's room, you know, like you said, there's room to get better. But I don't think anyone's kind of like shaking their heads like, I feel like, you know, this wasn't a good hire or anything like that.
All right, here's a hypothetical for you. So we're talking a lot about Tech, and I think we're overthinking this. I think that if Bronco is able to beat Tech, you know, most years, I think that would satisfy most people, to be honest. And like, even like, here's a hypothetical for you. So if every other year we don't make a bowl game, but we always beat Tech, would you take that and be happy with the coaching staff?
Personally, I feel like the floor has got to be a bowl game. You know, okay. I mean, more teams go to a bowl now than don't go to a bowl. So I think the floor has got to be a bowl game. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a big difference between a 6 or 7 win season that includes a win over a Tech and a 6 or 7 win season that doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that game, and, you know, Broncos realize this. And I think the fan base realizes this, is that that game does matter more. It absolutely matters more. So yeah, I mean, I think there's added significance. I think if you get that win without a bowl game, it's, you know, it doesn't have the same effect on necessarily, you know, the upward trajectory of the program. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a measuring stick where, you know, we still want more. You know, Bronco being 1-5 against Tech, and, you know, some of those were close, and but some of them really weren't close.
Yeah.
So I think that is a measuring stick, and, you know, an area where there's certainly room to improve.
Yeah, I agree. Rob,
would you take that if you could say five, six wins, but we beat Tech?
I think I would be satisfied for like 5 years. I could take 5 years of that, and then afterwards, I think I would start to grumble a little bit, because at that point, if we're beating Tech every year, it means Tech sucks, right? So, which is great. But it loses the luster over the time. Like when we used to beat Tech basketball every year, you know, that was awesome, but not the same, because they're not that good. So, or they didn't used to be that good. So if we start to beat them every year, that's wonderful. But you're right, over time, I would need the bowl game to step in. But I think give me 5 years of that, and I think I'd be happy.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to say it too, because if you want to like flip it a little bit, that's kind of where Tech's at.
Yeah.
You know, Tech has been kind of like a 6-7 win team a year for the past decade now. And hey, they beat UVA pretty much every year, but you know, there's a lot of grumblings in Blacksburg about, you know, their coaching staff and, you know, what their expectations are. And like you said, I think that's sustainable for a bit, but not sustainable forever.
I think
eventually there has to be higher expectations that are achieved.
Yeah, 16
fan base happen.
16 out of 17 is great, but you got to have some success too. So I'm talking about last what is it, 16 out of 17 wins for Tech against UVA?
Know. Yeah, that sounds right, dude. That sounds right.
It's something like that. Anyway, Rob,
it's not pretty.
No. Any last words about football? Any last thoughts, feelings you want to get out?
No, not really. I mean, anyone who knows me knows that I'm a Bronco fan. I know he has his faults, but I like the guy. You know, I like the way he thinks. I think he's incredibly interesting to follow. And, you know, he's not hard to follow either. You know, take what he says at face value, because that's normally the way he says it.
Exactly.
So I'm a Bronco fan, you know, still eager, like I said, still eager to get a little higher as far as, you know, win totals go. But I think if Craig Littlepage, when he made the hire of Coach Mendenhall, if he saw where we are right now in 2021 versus where we were at the end of 2015, he'd be really happy with how things turned out. I think most people are as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. One last thing I want to mention, and this is not football related, but for baseball draft for the MLB has started, and I think it's over, but we had 6 players taken in the first 15 rounds. In the first 13 rounds, we had Andrew Abbott, Zach Galifianakis, Griff McGarry, Mike Vassell, Nick Kent, and Zach Messinger all taken. We also had several prospects taken, including one of our a prospect from Pennsylvania taken 8th overall by the Rockies, so he's probably not coming to UVA. He'll probably go straight to the MLB, but I'm not sure he's decided officially yet, but like he's gonna make like $5 million signing bonus, so it'd be tough for him not to go. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that. So congrats to all the UVA people drafted over the past couple days.
And, absolutely, man.
Any other last words from you, Rob, UVA sports related or not?
Bah, obviously excited to start diving a little deeper into football over the coming weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, we're not far away from week zero, you know, heck, really isn't that far away.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll dive into that, but enjoying kind of the downtime of summer, and we'll gear it back up here soon enough.
Yes, sir. And hopefully I'll be more around to record, but we'll see what happens. So anyway, thanks so much for listening. This has been the Guys and Ties podcast. Appreciate everyone tuning in again. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Guys and Ties Pod. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Snapchat for any bonus content at Guys and Ties Pod. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify and iTunes if you want to keep listening. And we will see y'all next time. Go Hoos.